Hey everyone, welcome back to the Contextual Insurgent Podcast. I'm your host, Aaron Smith, and I'm once again joined by Tech Bro Tito.
Nostrovia.
So, today we finally got a chance to sit back down and talk about the Biden speech from a week ago, which was definitely raised some eyebrows. This was the one with the pretty wild set production, the blood red theme and the Marines in the background. It looked very imperial. It was kind of cool if you're like into like Warhammer 40K or something. It had a really cool pageantry look to it. Unfortunately for Biden, he's not the kind of guy that can carry that sort of thing. I think Trump could have pulled it off because, you know, Trump is a showman. He's the guy who was on WrestleMania. He understands that. Biden is, you know, Biden doesn't have that talent of pulling that sort of thing off. And I think it fell a little flat. But a lot of the things I'm hearing people talk about it. You know, there's definitely been a reaction on the right that, oh God, you know, Biden's going to come for us. And yes, I'm not intending to downplay the aggression and intensity that much of the left has for the right and how they're not willing to back down. You know, this is something where de-escalation, you know, we've talked about this several times, de-escalation's not on the menu anymore. But I think there's a big part of this, and that we were talking about this, a big part that people are missing when they just focus on it from a perspective of the right. One of the things, and the biggest thing that stands out to me on this is, Biden is a guy who is, he's been facing a challenge from the left. And this is really more of the audience that I think that was targeted to. You know, if you're online at all and you follow anything on Twitter, there's been something over the last few months about Dark Brandon. There's kind of like a meme that's been going around the left, and it was originated in like a Chinese cartoon. They were making some cartoons of Biden on like a look like a throne instead of made out of swords. It was made out of like rifles, and the whole point of it was kind of the Game of Thrones sort of aesthetic, but it was with you know, Biden sitting there with yellow eyes, and it was. And it started, you know, it filtered into right-wing Twitter. And, of course, the best memes come from the right-wing Twitter. And the lefties copied it very quickly. And they started pushing this whole Dark Brandon meme. And this thing, it really kind of, it was incredibly clear that they were really leaning into it. I think the aesthetics of the speech and the content of the speech itself, obviously Biden didn't come up with any of that stuff. That was something his administration, his staff really pushed. And it wasn't targeted so much at the right. And this is one of the things is, you know, and I see this a lot because the left talks about this too. It's really interesting when they talk about the right, they kind of assume the right's united. Like that just, I'm like, what planet are you living on? They're like, I see these lefties are like, we're so divided on the left. I wish we could be united like the right is. And of course, if you're listening to me now and you followed me for a while and you probably are fully aware that that's totally not the truth. But yeah, the whole thing is, you know, Biden had been crashing in the polls this summer, and there's been a theme of the last few months of them trying to salvage anything they can for the midterms by throwing everything at the wall. Like, they started pushing through a bunch of legislation. They had the so-called Inflation Reduction Act, which the CBO came out yesterday and was like, no, this is going to raise deficits and inflation for the next 5 years, at least, where it has a chance of even tamping anything down. They packed a bunch of the, wasn't a full Green New Deal. They did cut out some stuff for their lefty base or their lefty fringe vanguard group and gave them a chunk of Green New Deal things they were demanding. So you saw that, and then there's a lot of other stuff that's going on here. Like they started pushing up, you know, then now you've got this whole thing with Biden in a speech coming out attacking Trump. Attacking MAGA Republicans and, you know, that whole crazy speech, which, you know, had that, I thought it was super cool, the red aesthetic. And then again, if you zoom back, there was a blue lighting around it as well. And it was supposed to represent the American flag is what they said. But you don't really see that during the speech. You just have it punched in and you're seeing just this incredibly blood red background and this angry old man yelling at clouds with these, you know, faceless Marines in the background in their uniforms. But that whole thing, and this is the thing, it's like that wasn't really targeted attacking the right. It wasn't even really targeting the center. This was something that they were targeting their left, their base, because there's been a massive division in the left over the last few months. I mean, there has been from the beginning. So much of this stuff on the left is about targeting, finding some sort of scapegoat to target to keep the coalition together, because the leftist coalition is incredibly fractious. You know, this goes all the way back. It's funny to read some of the stuff from the 70s and like Days of Rage, because they had the Weathermen try to, you know, when they tried to come out from in the underground, they started this conference and they showed up at the conference and they were trying to bring everyone together. Then everyone's like, wait, holy shit, you know, number one, you stabbed us in the back. And number two, like, you know, all of our interests are different from yours. And that was like the swan song for them. But anyway, yeah, this is the thing you've seen so much of this on the left, is like the factions are falling away. And there's been serious talk over the summer about primarying Biden in 24. They've been floating names like the Governor Pritzker from Illinois, Gavin Newsom. You know, they've kind of avoided Kamala Harris because I think everyone, I've heard it floated a little bit, but it's never been really taken seriously. And this is really where, you know, where Biden is coming from. He's trying to cement his authority on the left by giving them that dark Brandon meme and trying to really lean into that of being a tough guy. And again, it wasn't Biden. And this is one of the interesting things. Obviously, Biden did not come up with any of this. His staff did. I've heard it referred to as theater kid occupied government. And I think it's a pretty accurate description. But the thing that's happening here with Biden is, you can tell too, another thing that goes on with him is you can tell when he says something and when he doesn't believe it, and when he's saying it because his staff is telling him to do it. And this is why, you know, Biden has this thing of mixed messages. Like the day after his speech, someone asked him if he thought, you know, do you really think MAGA Republicans are all extremists? And he's like, no, I don't think that at all. If you see Biden, and part of this is his incipient dementia, but another thing is, when you see him get caught kind of flat-footed, without any prior context and without any guidance, he, you know, that's usually when he's telling the truth of what he actually thinks. And when it's a prepared statement, he's not really saying that. That's likely not what he actually believes. That's something his staff believes. And he's just going to basically say whatever they tell him to. But that's really been the big thing. And that was the target of this speech, was the left. The factions that are trying to undermine him and replace him in 24. Because they're trying to, so much of this stuff too, you know, wasn't so much targeted at centrists and the right and all the legislation and stuff they're pushing, because they're trying to solidify their base, their coalition, to try to limit the damage that's coming in the midterms. Because they're like, it's a pretty far reach to get everything on their side, but they're like, maybe if we can activate our base, get everyone together, we can at least try to minimize the damage that's coming. What kind of thoughts do you have there, Tech Brady? Anything to add?
I think it's important to understand that you see, I think thing that's most not understood about the Trump phenomenon is really what it's creating, is it's creating pressure on the right from right, which is something the left has always had. There's always been the radical leftists pushing leftists, pushing people on in the liberals further. You know, famously, this provides backdrop for Bill Clinton to push back against, but the Sister Soldier moment, pushing back against what was seen as anti-white in the early 90s as a thing, and he's able to push back on this, and this provides grist for him. You famously have the anti-war Sidney Sheehan Code Pink stuff during the early aughts, 2000s, and all this. That, you know, that sort of pushes for the anti-war, and to some degree you can say that that's maybe why Kerry got the nomination to be an anti-war but war hero president, to run against George W. Bush in 2004. And then, of course, you know, like I said, we can keep going down and down. I don't mean to go back and give didactic history lesson. Point is, left has always had people pushing further, pushing for more, and pushing for those kinds of things. When people talk about the right, they talk about the right-wing donors, they talk about the right pushing for things, and perhaps they talked about, oh, crazy abortion activists and crazy churches. But they always talk about the things pushing right. And these were always relatively large structures, generally with elite interests. Again, you know, the pro-life perhaps doesn't have that. Perhaps guns, perhaps the Second Amendment doesn't have that. But again, you look at what was accomplished, you know, over the decades for pro-life. Not much, not much, not much. All of a sudden, Supreme Court managed to deliver. For guns, even better. All it is a holding pattern versus actually loosening of restrictions, creating ammo allowances for children in schools and all this, creating shooters education, creating more shooters education things in college, and doing things to further culture of guns. These things don't work. And so the thing is, I think what you have to understand about the MAGA Republicans is MAGA Republicans function as an actual more hard right push for the where it's not good enough to just deliver on platitudes, to deliver on quote-unquote protecting Second Amendment, but actually asking for deliverable things. And so all this digression is to say, people understand that the left is always has radicals that have to be appeased to some degree, and that's been weighted into the political calculus, the political math. But finally, what you have on the right, and why they're so angry about it, is having hardcore people on the right that you actually have to appease changes the political calculus in Washington. And so what you're seeing is, yeah, and so like I said, it's just as people said that Trump perhaps didn't get all the votes in 2020. I mean, most people will lean into voter fraud, but there's people that will say, well, Trump did abandon base, didn't build wall, didn't push hard enough on delivering to his base, and so people stayed home. This is part of explanation if you don't believe in voter fraud. And so, you know, what you're seeing is that Biden's afraid of the same thing. Him not giving delivery enough to base, not delivering things on Green New Deal, and being seen as coward who didn't deliver Green New Deal, didn't deliver future. And so he has to deliver something, specifically anger over Joe Manchin and all this could divide party. And so this is flanking maneuver to say, no, 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 the people to focus on, don't focus on Manchin, don't focus on cinema, don't focus on the sort of moderates that stopped you from getting your outlawing gas vehicles nationwide the next 5 years. Focus on the evil MAGAs.
Yeah, I think that's a huge part of this stuff too. Is like, yeah, part of the realignment has been a lot more and more college-educated whites moving to the Dems. So that's more extremely urbanized cohort. And again, there's this, you know, the more downscale, like a lot of the more working class whites and like the flyover whites, even like the fairly well off, like, you know, again, it's, I think when they refer to it as like, you know, college educated whites moving to the Dems, I think it's accurate in the big picture. I think it misses a lot of nuance. Like, it's not just college educated whites. It's a specific type of urbanized, you know, managerial class version of whites that are moving there. Like, there's plenty of like flyover college educated people, you know, a lot of the regional elite type people we've talked about before that are heavily involved with a lot of Republican Party stuff. So it does kind of like alight a little bit of the difference when you just say college educated whites are moving. But yeah, that's part of it too, is like there's this class of people, mainly the college-educated whites, and they're kind of out of touch with a lot of the rest of the country, that are driving a lot of this rhetoric from Biden. They're trying to really amp everything up, and it is like getting kind of weirdly close to eliminationist rhetoric, because, you know, this is the thing about the left, is like part of like this revolutionary politics, it's not about really dialing things back, it's not about dialing things down, it's about pushing as hard as you can for the objective. And for the longest time, the right has been, you know, so heavily captured by donors, and it's driven a lot because things have moved so slowly, that it's been more about capturing that energy and trying to dissipating it where it doesn't actually push back. And now we're seeing, and this is one of the things which, you know, regardless of your opinion on abortion, 50 years of work putting in and getting the outcome you want out of the Supreme Court, because you've elected the people president, you've advocated, like in the Federalist Society, for putting jurists on the bench that have specific opinions about originalism and whether or not abortion is actually covered by the Constitution. Long, long decades of work and a systematic, and that's the thing that scares them, because this was a very systematic thing. This was a systematic process that was really the reverse of what the left has done. And they're like, holy shit, you know, the wins that the left is like, the wins we have made through the courts over the past few decades, they're not safe, because the right can take control of the courts too and reverse those things and make the wins that they want. Like, this is also the Second Amendment stuff. All of a sudden, you know, the left is like, their magical tool for forcing cultural change on the country has been wrenched out of their hands, which is why now you're seeing them talking about add more states to the union so we get more senators, and then we can, pack the Supreme Court with jurists that we want. Like, they're just basically going full hog at this point because, they felt like victory was in their grasp, and now they're seeing it. Like, there is a massive group of Americans out there that are really just looking for the right person to lead them. And this is sort of the thing. It's like focusing on Trump activates their base because they have their target to coalesce around, but it really misses the bigger picture because they're so focused on Trump. The fact is, the people who backed him and supported him are still out there. And if Trump went away tomorrow, if you could like Thanos snap him away, it wouldn't matter because those people are still there. A lot of that sentiment is still out there, and there's just someone else. As long as there is a coalition out there that someone can just pick up the banner for, then there's always going to be someone else to come along.
Well, so I have to say one of the most interesting things I see, and this is ironically enough, usually I'm one that is sort of creating black pills and saying everything is far harsher and the worst case scenario than Aaron makes case for. But let me be the one to offer actually like positive interpretation, positive spin. I do what I can to keep abreast of sort of leftist rhetoric and leftist looking at things and all this. And one of the things you'll see, is you'll look and you'll see, Ezra Klein, who founded Vox magazine. He's a very important sort of thought leader on policy wonk left, as it is. Now, not so much liberal, but more the policy wonk left. He had an interview with Russell Moore of the Southern Baptist Convention not long ago, talking about the crisis in evangelical Christian circles. And I've seen this in the Atlantic, and this is something. So what I actually see is I see them trying to create, essentially to create this meme that fighting for abortion, and there may even be a basis of truth in particular circles, but let me get back to that. There's basically, they're pushing this idea that in fact winning Roe v. Wade being overturned is actually plunging evangelical churches into crisis, and they're being disorganized, and the evangelical movement is awry, and this is a major problem and all this. And so the thing is, what liberals hear is they hear and lefts hear is they say, ah, this is the major point of opposition. This is who created hated George W. Bush for the evangelical movement. So this is a very good movement for them because basically it says one of the power bases of right is fracturing. And so the positive interpretation is this. The closest thing you saw to some realization of working Americans coming together to sort of fight against offshoring, NAFTA, all sorts of stuff happened in the 90s. You saw it with the paleoconservatives, you saw it with Pat Buchanan, you saw it with these sorts of movements. But the problem with Pat Buchanan and such is that they were explicitly Christian and basically basically were Christian chauvinists in a way. Where if you were not Christian, basically in many ways they were like, well, if you're not Christian, get the hell out of the way. We don't need you. Trump's coalition is far more interesting because it involves many Christians, but it doesn't have the same Christian chauvinist message. But if you're not Christian, you can't work there. And so, in fact, one of the things I've heard is that, I'm sure the evangelical, I'm sure this fracturing, I'm sure religious right, all these things will weaken the right because they are still looking to the institutional, and the old coalitions of the right. Whereas Trump united different people, and many people came from paleoconservative, came from that kind of Christian, and you even see Christian nationalist memes coming from Marjorie Taylor Greene and from Andrew Torba of Gab and such like this. But the important point about Christian nationalism is, in many ways, it was already tried in the 90s, a Christian chauvinist nationalism, and that failed. And I say this as someone that has many hopes for Christianity as a movement and as a personal thing. But the thing is, Christian chauvinism, in fact, has been tried and failed. So absent some conquering army led by the Pope or something like that, another crusade, but it's aimed at America or something like that, go into historical allusions where you will, I just don't see it. What I do see is I do see them being a strong component and strong allies that are, if they're willing to work with people that are not Christian or not or nominally Christian but don't attend church and don't do these things, and as long as the Christians are willing to actually play ball and play well to work towards common goals,
I can see this far better movement where even if you have people like Russell Moore of Southern Baptist Convention saying, "Oh, this is terrible. Oh, we're not going to be united," and you know he was an anti-Trumper himself too. You will have this phenomenon where perhaps they have leaders of churches saying, "You must vote against Orange Man Trump. You must vote against such things." But the congregation says no. Maybe you know about God, maybe you know about Jesus, maybe you know about the apostles, maybe you know about these things, or maybe even organized people, but no, you're simply wrong about politics. I ignore you, and I go against you completely, and I won't even talk to you about it. And this is a very hardening thing, that in fact, I think we're moving towards a model that doesn't so much depend upon particular institutions that can be captured and yet have leaders get bought off, you know, with moral majority Falwell, and have people that get bought that buy jets for them, and then they'll leave their flock, you know, wherever they may please. I think you're starting to see a far more independent streak, but people also have essentially a class consciousness, seeing themselves as MAGAs, as Trumps, as having these things where maybe they're Christian, maybe they're not, maybe they're single mothers, maybe they earn over $100,000 a year, maybe they're college educated, but none of these things is necessarily sufficient. Where they can have a coalition with people that are none of these things, and they can still work together.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that sort of, you know, the coalition's fracturing is something you see on both sides, and I feel like, you know, it's one of those things where the right has, I feel like it can be more resilient, precisely because it's always been a little bit more diverse, and especially becoming more diverse now because, you know, we're part of the coalitional realignment that we're seeing going into the seventh party system is people with interests that may have wildly different backgrounds. And it works, I guess, because the right is more intrinsically attracted to federalism and local decision making. So you can really kind of, you know, solve for that issue there, where it's not something where, if you turn away from Orange Man Bad, like the left, like immediately starts falling apart. So I want to switch gears here a little bit and talk to a different topic. Another pressing topic that's been in the news recently. There's been this thing, and we're seeing this a lot in Dallas, well, like Texas so much. I think it was a Dallas suburb, of the John Brown gun clubs around the country showing up to guard these drag queen story hour things in red states. And it's really interesting to me because, you know, the most popular piece that I've written outside of, I've had a couple of print pieces that got pretty, we're in some, you know, 100,000 or so circulation. I had a print piece, but my most popular digital only piece was one I wrote in summer of 2019 about the Puget Sound John Brown Gun Club. I was talking about, I was basically warning about them, and it was a prescient article because like 4 days later, Willem Van Spronson, who was a member of this gun club, firebombed, he showed up with guns and Molotov cocktails and attacked an ICE facility in Tacoma, Washington, and he was shot and killed in the process of attacking it. And I wrote this piece like 4 days before this event happened, because I felt like no one was really paying attention to what was going on with these groups. And I was really touching on like how, because, you know, we joke, there's this assumption on the right that guns are only a right-wing thing, and lefties, they show it with Mosin Nagants and garbage gear, and they're pretty terrible. And I was like, hey, look, here's this gun club that's got some veterans in it. It's a commie gun club, and these guys have pretty good gear, and they've got pretty good equipment, and their equipment is set up fairly good. Or, you know, not the best I've ever seen, but it was a solid level of competence I didn't want to see with hard lefty gun clubs. And we're seeing this now where, again, these groups have been growing, and I wrote a piece for a Center for Security Policy, and we had an Unmasking Antifa monograph, and I wrote the tactics chapter for them. But I talked about some of the things, how these armed groups were starting to show up, and they were being used in certain ways to prevent pushback from the crowd. Like you have like the unarmed Antifa folks that will advance and be combative and take space, and then the armed group moves into that space right behind them because of the fact they're carrying guns. And then the armed people are usually peaceful, but what they do is, because they're armed, that raises the escalation risk, so people are much less likely to go start getting in a shoving fight with them. just because everyone knows the stakes are suddenly so much higher that there's a serious problem. So people kind of, you know, once they take a space that the unarmed people force their way into, they move in behind them, and it's harder to push them out. But these groups are showing up in red states now. A lot of people are like, wait, well, holy fuck, what are these people doing in, by God, Texas, you know, these folks? And the thing is, like, there's no... The one thing I want to... So a bunch of things I want to touch on here. The first thing is, you know, I get asked a lot, like, how should you, you know, because Second Amendment rights are the sort of thing that gun people have said for a long time. They belong to everyone. And it's not necessarily intrinsically a right-wing thing. But there's a question of where on the left, where do you draw the line for who will you work with? And this is something where people haven't really, you know, haven't really understood, and I needed to give some guidance on this because this is very important. I have two things. There's two bullet points that I use or criteria for whether or not that I'm even willing to like work with or acknowledge a group. The first thing is, does the group still believe in the political process? Is this a group, I mean, are they pro-guns people? Are they carrying guns? That's cool. But are they still people who agree, firstly, we should work through the political process? And that is a thing that covers the left and the right, because there's groups on the left and right that are basically like, we're just preparing for war. We don't care. Elections don't work anymore. There's groups on the left and right who believe that. And that is pretty much a no-brainer. Like, are these people who have already... They've already think that violence is inevitable, and they're just completely checked out of the political process. That's a group you shouldn't associate with or work with or help. The second thing is more of a lefty thing, and it's, does this group support individual rights or versus the collective interpretation of this? Like, what is the interpretation of the Second Amendment? Are they individual rights people? Are they a collectivist community self-defense interpretation? A lot of these, just because someone carries a gun doesn't mean that they're pro-gun. It doesn't even necessarily mean that they think they have an individual right to self-defense. I'll link the piece I wrote in the description, and I had a bunch of pull quotes from people that are interviewed. And the model that the left follows almost always explicitly rejects the individual rights interpretation of the Second Amendment. They believe in something called the community self-defense model, which is you as an individual do not have any right to own a gun just because you're an individual. You only have a right to own and carry a gun as long as you agree to work for the benefit of some nebulous collective. And this is something that you see a lot on the left where, you know, they always define the collective in a way that suits them. You know, if you're not on board with their agenda, you're suddenly at odds with the collective. And, you know, it's one of those things where it's a get out of jail free card, in a sense of you can just basically, you know, revoke the right of your opponent at any time or in manner of your choosing. But that's an important one. Like, do these people actually believe that you have an individual right to own and bear arms by virtue of being a free individual? Or do they believe you only have that if you're willing to do some sort of collective type of service? Are you working to make the community better?
Which, quite simply, like, you know, people get lost in esotericism. Let me make it very simple. Red Army was allowed to bear arms because they were Red Army. You were not allowed to bear arms as individual. You're not even allowed to necessarily bear arms as communist. But because you were a member of Red Army, enforcing a Red Army diktats, you could bear arms. As soon as you left and were not supporting Communist Party, you could not bear arms. And this is what we're talking about.
Yeah, there's actually, it's, you know, speaking of the Red Army, there's actually there's a group in Dallas called the Red Guard, which is, they carry guns and they show up, and they're like Maoist Leninists, and I think they what's the name of the El Salvador group? Yeah, these are
Shining Path.
Yeah, Shining Path. Yeah, these folks are hardcore, like, Shining Path fanboys, and they basically reject it. They reject the idea of individual rights for guns, and they carry guns everywhere.
Which, you know, just sort of the last point to sort of touch on for this, at least from what I see at this point, you have to see it as in line with the idea of when Josh Hawley was asking UC Berkeley professor about, you know, about if she was referring to a woman, and she got very hostile there,
because the thing is, she was saying he was calling for violence by calling into definitions. The definition of violence is defined by committee and stuff like that. It is not defined by individual transgressing, individual attack on actual bodily, on bodily harm, bodily integrity. It is defined in a community model. And these things are defined by community models so that even words, even violence, even terms like self-defense can be continually shifted and changed to depending on political advantage. And this is something the left will continually do, and I quite simply, the right does not see it. It does not see the systematic way everything is weaponized, everything is politicized, and everything can be made to basically push that political agenda further, which is why they're so effective.
Yeah, one final thing here I want to wrap up on here. These groups, what they're doing is they actually go out there and, you know, they're going to continue pushing into these red areas. They're going to continue building a base of power. This is a big part of what they want. Their first goal is to protect these blue areas. They want to keep the Chuds, the right wing people, red tribe, out of the blue area. And then they also want to expand their power into the red areas. And what they do by doing this is they find groups, whether if it's Drag Queen Story Hour or any type of little coalition they can find, and they make them they show up to you know, quote unquote, protect them or guard them, and they basically provide a service. Like a lot of this stuff, you know, it's the mechanism for them building power in an area is find a group that you can convince to help, be useful to this group, and then they build their power from there. So they're going to continue doing this sort of stuff, and they're going to continue finding reasons to get involved with local politics, and every little group they can find that they can classify as being oppressed, they're going to start helping these people or doing whatever they can to, you know, to get on their good side. Now, that's really kind of the leftist model for building power. So these folks are basically not going away. They're going to continue to be exerting power into red areas. We'll talk about this. I'm writing a piece on this right now, and I'm going to have that in a day or so. I've got some pretty cool interviews coming up. Had some good news from some followers, and I'm excited to follow up on that. I'm going to possibly get an interview with them on some projects they're working on. Any other last little thoughts there, TechBro?
Pretty much no. As I said, it's you know, Dark Brandon did look very much like sort of New Order from Star Wars or from Imperial Regime, but this has more to do with empowering basically the insatiable hunger of left to get policy things. Again, they got part of Green New Deal, but it still is not good enough. It still was seen as defeat, and you know, with the defeats of Supreme Court, they need to feel they have wins. They need to feel that the history, you know, as Obama quoted from I forget who, the arc of history is long, but it bends towards justice. These people, you know, are addicted to momentum. They're addicted to that sort of short-term dopamine fix, and so part of the thing is keeping them engaged is about throwing red meat to them and these kinds of things. If you deny that constant drip of things like that, they get disengaged, and this is a major problem for midterms. So in fact, many of the way to respond is not actually to respond by, like, you know, oh well, I will grab a gun and it will be a Civil War 2.0 and blah 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 blah, because this exactly feeds into what they want. It validates the sort of left. It makes the more moderate Democrats who are maybe considering to back away from Biden, makes them decide that they have to stick with their crazies because, you know, they think you're crazier and scarier. Instead, like responding with, like, you know, the Dark Brandon and they're coming for you. Just like you said, just continually hammer on gas prices, hammer on economy, hammer on, you know, lights going out in Europe, not from your totalitarianism, but from Europe intentionally. And they're refusing to make broker with only power, with only gas brokers they have, and that, you know, this is like, you know, it's, you know, like Europe is going dark under Biden's watch, and it's pretty funny that they have to define that Europe is going dark under Brandon's watch, and that's, you know, but of course it's not his fault, and how is it not his fault again, even though it's going dark on his watch? Isn't he a Neville Chamberlain of sorts? Just pushing like that, I think, you know, in that kind of more Chad, confident kind of way, and then, you know, talking in their language and stuff like that, but also, you know, pointing out the weakness of their primary, I think is far more helpful.
Yeah, that's good points, really good points. Thanks for joining me again here. We're going to wrap this up, and I have some other pretty good ones we're going to do. I want to do one, we'll touch on some more of those points in the future, but thanks for joining in, and we'll talk to you later.
Nice to meet you.